Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for Banal of America
of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules, and at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. Welcome to another edition of BOA Audio Season 10, The Final Voyage. And, you know, I said this with Bruce Rucks, but it's true tonight, too. You know, when we say no comparison, I don't think any guest really can exemplify that mission statement of this program more than tonight's guest. He appeared first on the show back in 2009 for the 10th anniversary of the Columbine Massacre. That's when we were first introduced to William Zabel. And that, my friends, was one of the most unforgettable interviews that I've ever done. At the risk of being hyperbolic, I'd say it was probably like one of the best interviews, you know, ever in the history of the show. It was just absolutely amazing. I was thinking about it the other day. It was so unforgettable. I've done a million of these interviews, folks. I've done like 300 plus over the last 10 plus years. That interview, I can still remember like the circumstances of like where I was in the room, what was on the TV. There was a Red Sox Oakland A's game on mute on the TV as we were doing the show. That's like how well I remember this conversation. It was just so indelibly imprinted in my mind. That's how unforgettable that conversation was. And then, much like Bruce Rucks, he sort of developed a story here because then William Zabel disappeared on us. People were like, hey, I can't find William Zabel. I can't find William Zabel. He was gone for like 5 or 6 years, and it became this sort of in-joke story of the show where it was like, yeah, William Zabel, he disappeared. We don't know what happened to him. And eventually someone was like, dude, he's on Facebook. And so I looked and there he was, and we reconnected and we got him back on the show. And since then I've had William on sparingly. You know, I sort of weaved Bruce into the fabric of the show, but with William, it's like, He's like a hot fudge sundae, man. You can't have him once a year, even. You gotta just like enjoy it when you can, because that's how much fun the conversations are. And for some strange reason, him and I have this weird chemistry. We have a great chemistry on the air. I don't know how or why it developed, but I love talking to him, and I've been looking forward to this interview tonight since I locked him in last week, and more and more as the days have gone by, and all day today, I'm just like, oh, I can't wait. It's gonna be so much fun. So, welcome back to the show, William Zabel. Thank you for everything you've done over the years for this program. You know, you've given us countless entertaining interviews, so thank you so much, and welcome back.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be back, and thank you for all you've done, and having me on, and having other people on that expose the corruption in this country and around the world and what's going on. So, yeah.
Well, it's been my pleasure, man. I mean, I don't think you do too many other shows. I don't recall seeing you on or seeing you appear in too many places. So it's like,
yeah,
you kinda...
mostly oddball shows.
Well, there you go.
They're more like the Patriot radio stations. They back in the heyday of the internet when most people were still on dial-up, so I was really on the AM dial quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, those types of radio stations. And most of them are still around, but, you know, the shows are archived and people didn't even know I was even on any of those shows. So, yeah.
Right. Well, like I said, yeah, it seems, you know, I don't see you in a lot of places, which makes it special, too, to have you sort of like a fixture, you know, of this program, and it's been great over the years. So, and, you know, as I alluded to here, this is the last episode or last season in our seasonal format. You know, we do like season 3, season 4. So we're wrapping it up at season 10. I don't know when or what we're going to do next. But, you know, when I was putting together the list of guests and everything, it was like, William Zabel, that's a no-brainer. That was, you know, you were within, like, the first, like, five names I put down on the list just off the top of my head. It was like, all right, who do we have to have on the final season? It was like, well, fucking William Zabel, obviously. So,
yeah.
Hey, exactly. So what have you been up to since the last time we talked to you? It's been a couple years, I think. A lot's happened out there in the world. We'll get to that.
Oh, yeah.
I think the last time I talked to you, I think, was like, there were so many of these shootings, it's hard to keep track, but there was I forget which shooting we had talked about last, but they're getting more and more frequent. But how have you been since the last time we talked to you?
Just really looking at these shootings hardcore, it's hard to tell the motives because in many of them nowadays, the government's not jumping immediately on the anti-gun bandwagon. They're just, you know, they're saying, oh, here's another horrible shooting. And we do know it's obvious that some of these shootings either are fake or they started out as drills and then went live, kind of like 911.
Right.
And they were doing a drill out in Las Vegas. I got a copy of the memo. Some kid working in the hotel snapped it with his cell phone and put it on the internet. The whole thing with this Steve guy doesn't make any sense. He has no motive. He wasn't mad at anybody. He didn't have a manifesto. Unlike Columbine, where Harrison Klebold and these other secret kids and adults that were involved all had a manifesto. They had a reason to do it. They were, you know, basically all involved with the government at some level. This guy is just an anomaly.
Yeah.
And then you have the Paris shooting, and then that London shooting really bothered me because they had done a drill a month before. And I keep telling people, if they do a drill in your town, watch out, because within a few weeks or a month, there's going to be a real shooting. They did the same thing here, Tim, right in my stupid little redneck town. They did a drill, and they said they were going to do it over at the old Chevy dealership, and it was going to be one of those barricade shooter drills. Next thing you know, there's a guy who's supposedly barricaded in his house with his girlfriend. Him and his girlfriend have no idea why the SWAT team's there. They're on the phone to 911 going, why are you at my house? I haven't done anything. What's going on?
Yeah.
He says, call them off and I'll come out with my hands up. But he says, they got their guns aimed at my house. And she goes, sir, there's nobody at your address. She goes, they're across the street. And he goes, no, they're not. They're looking right at my house. Well, this guy and his girlfriend, they got him out. But they were there all day long, the SWAT team was, and they were screwing around. And it's hard to tell if this guy and his girlfriend were part of the drill. But I think what they're doing, and this police psychologist turned me on to this idea, he thinks they're picking innocent victims who are in the locale where they're doing these drills, and they're turning the drill on them and basically making them Lee Harvey Oswald, where they're not even involved with anything. They're not doing anything. But when law enforcement enters their home, he says what he thinks happening is they're reacting like any normal human being. Oh, my God, here's this guy dressed in black. You know?
Yeah, yeah. It's like that guy that got swatted and he shot and the cop shot him. You talking about that kind of thing?
And so we have these things going on. This guy, they grab him and his girlfriend after a day of screwing around. The cops are walking around the house all day outside and,
Jesus.
You know, and there was no communications, no nothing. Finally, around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, they go into the house. No flashbangs, no nothing. They just go in the front door. This guy and his girlfriend disappear into the county jail and vanish. So I go to the house later because I remember when I was a kid walking by the house, and I know there was a lady that worked at the post office that lived there, and that same lady walked out, and I go, do you live here? And she goes, well, yeah, I live here. And I said, this is your house? And she goes, yeah. And I said, do you remember what happened earlier today? She goes, oh, yeah, my son was involved in that thing. They pay people good money to do that. And I said, do what? And she goes, oh, to pretend that they're suspects. And I'm like, really? And she goes, oh, yeah. So I told the Brighton Blade. I told everybody. And, oh, oh, immediately, oh, you communist, you must be an Obama lover and Hillary lover and all that. They just start going on and on. And the thing is, this guy really was in trouble with the law. Later on, he appears in the newspaper again, and I'm like, hey, that's a guy they took out of the house. Well, he was in trouble with in another county. So I think what they're doing is they're doing these drills, and they're finding somebody that they can use as a Lee Harvey Oswald, some kind of patsy, and then they're going after that person. Now, in Las Vegas...
And the people are the people like... What happens to the people? You mean they're making them Lee Harvey Oswalds, though? Like they're
well, in some cases, these people are being killed during these police shootings, and everybody in the neighborhood says, why did the police go in that house? That person didn't do anything. But yet there's a drill going on in that neighborhood at the same time. And I think what they're doing is they're taking these things live. The government's actually creating them, you know, just like they did at 911. You know, we all know that those planes are being controlled by remote control, probably the NSA, because there's no way, every pilot says it, there is no way that you could guide those planes into those buildings. There's no way they could hit the Pentagon. I mean, we've seen all the aerodynamics and everything of 911. Every pilot on the planet, every engineer has spoken about it and says how impossible that is. So, but I think they have continued this now on a local level where they're doing these drills, and at the same time, they got these events going live. And if you look at these shootings around the country and read the newspapers and listen to the news accounts, the people in those neighborhoods go, what's going on? That person's never done anything wrong. Why'd they go in his house? You know, everyone's going, what's going on here? And when you have a community that can't figure out why this is happening, it's like, people, stop and think. In your community, they just did a drill that day. Start making the connections. And unfortunately, a lot of Americans are still not connecting that.
Yeah, well, it's weird. I don't know what to make of what you're saying. I'd have to see more. You'd have to show me some not evidence, but like articles or whatever of like these instances, because I don't know what.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't really heard about. I know about the drill. The sort of, I don't know if you call it a theory or whatever, but like the idea that like these things are connected to drills. So let's circle back to Las Vegas, because that was sort of the big.
Okay.
I noticed last time I talked to you was the spring of 2016. So you're just ramping up. I wish I had gone back and listened, because I don't remember how where you fell on the election and everything. But I'm interested to find out what you think now. But before we get to all that, let's talk about Vegas, because that to me. Now, you know, I'm not like an ardent conspiracy theorist, and I'm not really – I'm very hesitant to get on board with a lot of these things. But even I have been, like, riveted by this story, because to me it's like something clearly does not add up with this story. There's something really fucking wrong about this story. So, like, what do you think happened for real in Vegas?
I think that there was a real assassination-type operation – but this Steve guy and this shooting from the hotel, I think, was fake. They were doing a drill, and I've got the news footage. I was recording news footage just like I did at Columbine, right and left. And I started talking to people I know in Vegas, and they're like, well, we don't know what happened. Why would this guy do this? I mean, we were right in the middle of a drill. What did he know about the drill and decide to start shooting? I'm like, wait a minute, hold on. Drill? And they're like, well, yeah, we do them all the time. Every city does these types of disaster drills. And remember at 911, they were doing a drill that one day. And at Columbine, they had done a drill in early April, the first week of April, and they'd done a drill in March of a school shooter. So, you know, in all of these places, you have these drills going on suspiciously close to this. Now, here's the other thing. I've got news footage of a guy who's doing security at the rock concert right across from the Mandalay Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And he's standing there and he's smiling, laughing. He goes, you know, he says, you guys want to stand up, go ahead. He says, it's no big deal. And he's just laughing and carrying on. And this one lady turns around to her boyfriend and she goes, that sound of gunfire. She goes, it's coming through the speakers. And then everybody else starts listening. And that's when they stand up. They're like, it's coming through the speakers. Well, people had never been to Las Vegas. Las Vegas is one of the most highly surveilled cities in America. It's even worse than Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
They have what's called smart lampposts. And if you're seeing anything really nasty, you don't want to be near one of those lampposts because they record video and audio of everything you're doing. But there's a catch to that. They also can transmit through those lampposts, both audio and video. And that is what people were hearing.
Now, how do they transfer video through the lamppost?
They have little screens. These are the little, you've seen them like in Europe at the bus stations and airports, the little screens on the poles.
Welcome
to our city, blah, blah, blah.
I thought you meant like they were shooting like fucking holograms and shit.
No, there's little screens on the lampposts. They're touch screens, so if you're lost, you can touch them and type in what street you're looking for, things like that. Las Vegas was the first city to get the smart lampposts. There's other cities getting them now. But the thing is you have people admitting that they're hearing this come through the speakers. And later on, as people are running away from the scene, you have people that have gray makeup on who are obviously supposed to be playing dead people. And they're carrying other people who obviously are not hurt. They're fully conscious. There's no blood on them or anything. And in one case, they have a girl in a wheelbarrow, and this is a paramedic, has her in a wheelbarrow, and there is a stretcher right next to the wheelbarrow. Why would you put somebody in a wheelbarrow? Paramedics know better than to do something like that. You've got to keep...
Where would you find a wheelbarrow anyway? Jesus.
Yeah, that was the other question that I had. Where would you find the wheelbarrow? But these photos are kind of like that whole synchronicity thing where, you know, somebody just magically admits, okay, yeah, I killed the hooker, and, you know, that kind of thing where they weren't thinking, they just talked.
Yeah.
Well, these photos are talking for us. They're telling us there's something wrong with this picture. It's just one of those things. And the more and more I saw these photos, and you see these people, they put all these people in the back of a pickup who are supposedly injured, and they've been shot. Now, remember, this guy is shooting 50 calibers. He's got some 50 calibers. He's got some AK-47s. You don't get up and walk away from a bullet like that. You don't get a small bullet hole like with a 9mm. A 50 cal or an AK-47 is going to take a limb completely off. Nowhere did I see anybody with missing limbs.
Even if he was, super far away inside the top of an elevator? I mean, a hotel?
Oh, yeah. A 50 cal will go 2 miles, no problem, at full speed of sound velocity. Oh, yeah.
All right.
I mean, even if most of his bullets miss, some are going to hit, and when they do, you know, a person's going to get ripped open.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I've been a personal witness to this in Panama back in 89, so I can attest to the fact that AK-47s don't create little bullet holes. They take limbs completely off.
All right, stop right there. What the fuck were you doing in Panama in 89 where you saw somebody get shot, if you can talk about it?
That was during the invasion when we went in there in December to get Noriega.
Yeah.
I had just gotten divorced, and my cousin wanted me to come along with him. He was a reporter for UPI, and I said, well, okay, we're going to go, you know, take pictures of Noriega and listen to him talk about how great of a guy he is. And we got down there, and we were there for the interview when Noriega said, I'm going to hold another press conference, and I'm going to tell the world about what the CIA and the American government does in my country and who I really work for. Boom. 2 days later, we were in there. They killed 50,000 civilians, the American government did, the military did, and buried the bodies out in the jungle. It was CNN, believe it or not, reporters for CNN that found the bodies, and then we all went out there. And I took pictures of a lot of that stuff, and a couple of things that my cousin wrote about ended up in the documentary, The Panama Deception.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
So you were down there. I lost you just a minute, Lila. You were down there with your friend. What was your friend doing, or your cousin?
My cousin. He is a reporter for United Press International.
Oh, UPI. All right.
Yeah.
And you got to go down there. Was it scary?
Oh,
you must
have
been scared. Sounds like it's terrifying. Why would you go into, like, were you protected by reporter? Like, were you?
Yeah, well, we had, believe it or not, we had a military escort, a U.S. military escort.
Really?
And so we were able to go places that a lot of people couldn't. And we saw the guys who were obviously American military personnel in civilian clothes. And they were taking pot shots at the Panamanian soldiers and police to try and get them to react and shoot back.
Jesus.
And a lot of this stuff was kept out of the American media, but then after the Panama Deception came out, Congress started looking into it, and then other independent researchers, and You know, even Gary Webb, you know, who did the CIA drug connection, he even looked into the Panama thing. And, you know, people started getting into it. And they're like, oh, my God, look what the U.S. did down there. And Noriega, everybody knew he was on the payroll of the CIA. He was educated in America, you know, just like Saddam was, just like Gaddafi was. They were all educated at American elite colleges, and they were all recruited by the CIA to run those countries, to get in there so that our government could use those countries for a multitude of things, like American corporations using the cheap labor, also using the drugs down there, bringing them into our country and using their governments and their military as conduits. Yeah, it's the old Iran-Contra story.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. So I was kind of hoping you were like part of some kind of assassination squad, like you never told us about before. But now it's like, oh, it turns out you were also special forces in '89. But okay, so you're just down there as a reporter doing reporting, but still pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're back. Let's get back to Vegas. So you're saying, so what are you saying? That nobody got shot? Because you don't have a hard time with that kind of thinking. Because to me,
well,
it just sounds completely wholly unbelievable, dude. It's like I have a hard time believing it.
Once again, people got killed, just not the people they showed on the media. This, what they do in these operations, and I got a few of these manuals that were declassified that clearly show how the U.S. military does this. When they go into, let's say they got to go into a country and assassinate, you know, some director of an agency in some third world country because he's creating problems for one of our corporations or whatever, they will set it up to look like a gangland shooting or a disgruntled employee of that agency, or they'll set it up to look like some rebel group or whatever. So what they do is they create this mass scene where other people get shot around this person, and then this person, they never advertise on TV this person was assassinated. He just disappears, kind of like a Columbine, where kids who were supposedly not even shot disappeared from the school afterwards and were never seen or heard from again, but they weren't victims. They didn't get shot. They didn't even supposedly really see anything. And many of these shootings who were there but supposedly were not witnesses, they were not shot, they didn't know anything, but they vanished afterwards.
Weird.
I think this is what happened in Vegas. They were doing some type of high-level meeting. There was some CIA people there. This has been admitted in the media. There was Homeland Security people there, and there was some big wingding over this whole mess in Syria. And what it was that they were trying to bring in some of these Syrian rebels into the U.S. to train them out in Nevada. And Homeland Security was saying, we can't cover this. People are going to find out. We can't train them here. We got to train them in South America. Those people were in Vegas on the night of that shooting. A lot of those people, those agencies that were whining, you know, to Congress and the media about, you know, we've got to back off from the rebels, you know, they've got Al-Qaeda in their midst, we can't deal with them. These people have now gone totally silent. We haven't heard anything from them since they met at the hotels in Vegas the night of the shooting. Suddenly it's all gone quiet. Those guys have all disappeared.
So,
were that the real targets? Were those the real targets? Did somebody take them out and then use the concert goers in this drill as a cover for another assassination? I think that's what they're doing.
Interesting. So in this scenario, was Paddock or Steve, as you call him, Stephen Paddock, was he like, clearly you think he was a patsy. So what, was he he had no idea? He was just some chump in his hotel room. Maybe, clearly he had an interesting gun, so they said that on the news. So it's like, were those, all those his guns? Like, what the hell happened in that hotel room? Nothing? The whole thing was all set up?
I think it was a setup, but I do think they probably killed the guy. He may have thought, because he's got a lot of really weird, almost intelligence agency-like background to him.
Right. That's what a lot of people have picked up on. I'm on the same
and
page with you there. There's something really sketchy about this dude where it's like, he was a professional gambler, but was it like, was he actually using that to float money through, that he was actually making on arms deals or something like that? That's a lot of people think, but who knows?
I think he's just like these morons that were involved in the Kennedy assassination. They all have their own little things that they do on the side, drinking, drugs, hookers, gambling, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's just part of their life that they do while they're out working for the CIA or whoever. And I think that's what this guy was. You know, he's got his Asian girlfriend. He's got his gun collection. You know, he's got his gambling habits. And I think he thought he was there for some type of intel operation, and he didn't realize they were setting him up. And I think that's what was going on. And just like Oswald, I think Oswald thought he was a part of intelligence operation and that he was doing something for his country. Well, look at what he got blamed with.
Right. So it's like they just sort of – they just like say – you know, they just kind of act like all these people, they have a reason for being there. And most of the time they're duped into thinking that they're doing something like good.
Yeah.
How many – now, how many – before we – I'm going to jump off of Vegas for a second. We've seen like a million of these shootings now, dude. Are they all fake, or are they all like – where do you draw the line here? What's your percentage on these?
Well, I draw the line at the person's background, the circumstances that he or she found themselves in when they did the shooting, whether a drill was going on in the neighborhood or that town at the time of the shooting, and whether it was too close to be coincidence. I mean, if it's a big city like, say, New York, and there's a drill on one side of town and a shooting on the other side, that's just coincidence. Because there are so many shootings that go on in big cities. You know, some gangbanger didn't get paid for his drugs, or, you know, some guy found his wife in a motel with another man. And just, you know, that's where you draw the line. You say, oh, that's just real. I look at the background, I say, okay, the guy's mad at the world, his wife divorced him, he lost his business, you know, he wants to blame this guy over here because this guy, you know, was sleeping with his wife, or this guy took his business away, so he's going to go pop a cap in him. That's where I say, that's real, get it out of the way.
Yeah.
Where I have a problem is people with no violent backgrounds, never been in trouble with the law, and they end up right in the middle of one of these drills, or like a block away or two blocks away. And everybody can't believe that this person would hurt another person. And everybody's going, what happened to this guy? What's going on? And then when you read the paper very carefully, you'll see, oh, it's so tragic that John Smith blew away his neighbor when there was a drill going on two blocks away. The poor cops were so involved with the drill, they just couldn't respond in time. And I go, oops, red flag.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, you know, I don't know what to make of these. There's so many of them, I can't keep track of them. So the Vegas thing, you think that it was all that it was a cover, let's say, for a some kind of clandestine.
It was an intelligence operation. There's no doubt. And
there's something weird about it. I'll definitely say that. There's something weird about it.
Yeah, and there's lots of things that go on like that. Now, supposedly the rule is, because the mob controls Vegas, if you meet in Vegas, whether it's U.S. government or the Russian mob or the Italian mob has other people come in, you leave your guns at home, you come in, you do your business, and you go. There's not supposed to be any violence in Vegas whatsoever. The mobsters have all agreed with that. You know, all of them have agreed that Vegas is kind of like their neutral territory, and they've even told the U.S. government, you know, you run your operations, fine. You want to run an operation in a casino, fine, but we want our cut and no violence. Take it out of the city limits. That's, you know, that's the my grandpa was, you know, involved with the Small Dones here in Colorado, which is a mob. And he wasn't really involved with them. He's a cab driver. He drove the godfather of the Small Dones out to the VA to get treatment because he is a World War II vet. And they used to sit and talk with him, and he talked with them, and they always told him, they said, when you go to Vegas, don't worry, nothing's going to happen because we have a no-violence policy inside the city limits. Nobody gets hit in city limits, blah, blah, blah. You know, so that's where I get all this from. It's my grandpa telling me what, you know, they said, and I met a few of those guys, and, you know, and that was always their policy. It always has been. So if something like this went on in Vegas, this was – very serious, and I guarantee you there are some wise guys, there are some mobsters that are probably pretty ticked off about this shooting, because that is a big no-no, whether this was a U.S. intelligence operation, whether it was just a simple sting operation, or whether this nut job just carried the guns in. Now, here's a problem in Las Vegas hotels.
Yeah.
People don't know this, for the most part, some do. But they have scanners at the door that scan you when you come in with your bags. If you've got a gun or a knife on you, the scanner goes off and security meets you before you get to the front desk. And, you know, if you just say, oh, I'm from Denver, I'm from whatever, and I can carry concealed there, I didn't know. Okay, let us take your gun. We'll put it in the safe. You can have it when you leave. That's how they work that. Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right. I've never brought a gun to Vegas, so I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Me in Vegas with a gun is like, that's nothing good can come from that, William. Nothing good.
But they have the scanners at the door for that reason, you know, because they don't want the trouble. You know. They don't want the gangbangers bringing their hardware in and stuff like that. So, I mean, if you're an honest person and you have a concealed weapon permit from another state, they'll understand. They won't escort you out or call the cops. They'll just say, give it to us. We'll put it in the safe and you'll get it when you leave. And that's how they'll operate it.
How do you get the guns in? Yeah.
How did he get the guns in unless he had somebody working for him in the hotel that may have opened the back door? But if that's the case, that is the most heavily surveilled city in America. There's video cameras everywhere. It's like London. Every 5 feet, a camera's looking at you in the face.
Well, that's the problem I've had with this whole thing, too, in a lot of ways, because they say there's no cameras in the hallways. Now, I'm sure you probably disagree, but that's beside the point. There's definitely fucking cameras everywhere else. And it's like we've never seen any video of this guy coming into the, you know, coming into the fucking casino. There's never been any video. Yeah. But this is now, you are heavily into this, even more so than me. But, I mean, I was blown away when the pictures got leaked of him with his fucking head blown off, because it was like, that shit never happens. You never get that kind of graphic leak of the suspect having fucking blown their brains out. So it's like, that to me raised a red flag where it's like, something really weird's going on with this thing.
Yeah. Well, it's part of their narrative. They need you to see a dead suspect so you'll believe that he's the dead suspect, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just like at Columbine, you know, people are like, no way did Harrison Klebold do this. I mean, all the rounds that were fired, they were seen in the same place at the same time. What happens? The photos of those two dead in the library get leaked, and nobody ever knew who did it. They got leaked, you know.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing. Once again, they're creating their patsy. They're releasing photos of their patsy. See, here's the suspect. The scumbag's dead. We're fine. We'll do the investigation, and then it all goes away. You know.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, there's just too many, you know, there's too many unanswered questions there. Now they've come out with, supposedly there was a helicopter shooting from a helicopter and everything. And, you know, that would be so painfully obvious. I don't know how they could get away with that if there really was a helicopter doing the shooting. The government would just never run an operation like that. They would have snipers close up. You know, that type of thing. The idea that they had a helicopter running over the concert goers, I just don't see it.
Yeah.
You know, but that was some of the stuff that appeared on the internet within a few months after that.
It was pretty interesting, and it gets more interesting. I think people are going to, you know, are going to dig more into this, because this one has a certain appeal to it that a lot of these other shootings, like, look at that one. Well, I guess that was a bombing. Maybe the difference between a bombing and a shooting. But I guess because the Orlando one, there really hasn't spawned a lot of conspiracy theories. This one here, by the sheer bizarre nature of it and the unanswered questions, it's like this Vegas thing is like, it really hits all the sweet spots for a good conspiracy theory.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. So I think I have an understanding of what your perspective on all this is. The shooting, I guess, what didn't happen as you say it happened. So as they say it happened. So there were these people, like, people did die, but they were what, random people? Who were the people that died?
I would say that the people who died were those people that were there from Homeland Security. Some of the there was FBI there, Homeland Security high level agents. They were all, and there was a representative from McCain's office there. There was a couple other people there that day, and they were in the Mandalay Bay Hotel. They were actually there at that hotel. They were discussing the Syria mess and how the revelations of ISIS and Al-Qaeda being involved were hurting our ability to fund and keep these guys in business because everybody was throwing a fit. That's the meeting that was going on there. Now, since that shooting happened that night, no more has been heard about this or from those people.
No.
And I mean, I can't find any statements by those people since that meeting, since that shooting happened. I mean, they just disappeared off the planet. And I think that's how the government is doing this. They're using these drills as cover for their assassination. And when they want to get somebody, and they know a person's going to be in a town like Las Vegas or Denver or whatever, they set up one of these drills. These drills are all done through Homeland Security. And then while everybody is watching this on the news, the kids and everything come out with, you know, bloody shirts and everything, the government is in there with their cleaners actually doing the real assassinations on people that whose names will never appear in the news.
Yeah.
And it's standard procedure. This is how our
part of me, though, is just like, this sounds way too complicated for, I feel like they're doing so much more extra work somehow. I mean, I don't know. It seems like too convoluted a conspiracy, but maybe, you know, maybe that's why I don't make a lot of conspiracies, because they have to be complicated like that.
Well, and in a case like this, it's not too hard to see how they can do this and how it's not really that complicated. It could be the opposite. Instead of ordering a drill where they know a person's going to be, the Homeland Security looks it up. They know where a drill is going to be in a certain town, and if they want to take a person out, they use their front people to say, well, let's go meet in Vegas on this day. You know, you're going to be meeting with other high-level people. We'll discuss the Syria rebel thing and all that. And then those people have no clue as to what's going on, that, you know, they're about to be set up.
And what, are they giving tickets to the concert?
No.
Or does this all take place like in a different location, and then they just switch the bodies? That's, I mean, like I said, that's, this is where it gets complicated, where it's like, why would they do all that? like you and I could come up with a better way of orchestrating a plan.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That's a terrible idea. It's a, so many ways, you know, things could go wrong if you're making this kind of switch and you're trying to get people to believe that there was a shooter in the top of a hotel. It's like, Jesus Christ, it's a lot of work.
Well, and the thing is that you have fake shooters shooting during these drills. Obviously, you have that going on. So the people involved in the drill have no idea what's happening. And then, you know, later on at the hospital, they're like, holy crap, some guy did show up and start shooting for real. Only they don't realize that they're not the victims, whether real or fake, that the real shooters were, you know, elsewhere. Now, if you look on the internet, you can find companies that do crowdsourcing for these drills. Now, here's the thing that they will never tell you, but I found out. When you're involved in these drills, you have to sign a national security oath. You cannot talk about these drills. You have to tell the world that you were the victim of a real shooting. If anybody says anything about a drill, they're to walk away. I've got the manual. I got to find it. A cop got me the manual. He was doing a drill down in Georgia that went live a couple years ago and became a shooting, and he snuck the manual out. I got it. I just got to find it. It's a PDF file, but it clearly states in there that on the last couple of pages of the book that these crisis actors get, they have to sign it saying that they will never disclose that they were involved in an active shooter drill, that they are indeed real victims. So, you know, that's where they're getting away with this, is they're scaring these people into keeping their mouths shut.
Yeah.
And, of course, you go back to Sandy Hook. That is just so, that's so dark and mysterious there. I mean, no telling what really happened there.
Yeah.
I mean, was it real? Was it fake? I mean, there is so much obvious fakery going on there. And you have these people, some of these parents, who appear at Sandy Hook. Then they're seen at the Boston bombing. Then they're seen at the Aurora theater shooting, Batman shooting, and they're the same people. I've got them on the news. The voice is exactly the same. The faces are exactly the same, but they're using different names.
I've seen these things. I don't believe them. I've seen them. I don't believe them. Let's move away from shootings, because I don't like even getting into that Sandy Hook thing. It's just depressing. You know. So, because I feel like if anyone can see the forest for the trees, it's you. You see this vast,
yeah.
the vastness of this. And
yeah.
I think what we're all seeing right now, what we're all seeing right now is sort of like this, what I think is this like deep state war going on between different agencies and different factions.
Oh,
You know, fighting for control of the very, you know, of the very soul of the government of America. So where do you see all, you know, the lay of land on this? Because I imagine you see something quite fascinating.
Well, what I see going on here is there is a war going on, but I want people to understand firsthand is that Trump is not the good guy in this.
Mm-hmm.
He might even think he's the good guy. He might think, well, I'm here to help America. But remember his connections. Remember his past. Look at what he has publicly said. Women, about his own daughter, his bankruptcies, his involvement with the Italian mob where his contractors were all mobbed up, his building real estate deals that fell through, and the fact that he has been lifelong good friends with the Clintons and with convicted pedophile Jeffrey Epstein. What is happening here, from what I can see, and this is from psychologists and psychiatrists telling me this, is that Trump is indeed the loose cannon that the deep state is scared of, but it's kind of like, you know, in the Italian mafia, you know, you might have, you know, Jimmy, who he grew up in the mob, but he don't like it. He wants to go to college. He wants to get away from this mob. These guys are all crazy. He wants to go, you know, and they're saying, Jimmy, you go to college. You don't talk about what goes on here. You know, don't say anything.
Yeah, so what, Donald Trump just wants to be an actor?
Yeah, he's just – this is a game to him. He's just – this is his ego. And the problem is that he knows where all the bodies are buried. He's known for a long time. Trump is no lackey, just real estate junkie, you know, this failed real estate developer. This guy has been knee-deep in the CIA and the FBI for decades now. There is no way that this guy is anywhere near as honest as he claims. He's married foreign women both times, and both women have come from families that have intelligence connections in their own countries. And that is not coincidence, you know.
Yeah.
And you have this current thing going on in the White House, and, you know, the deep state is after Trump. Well, the fact is that he is the president of the United States. If he truly is as independent as he thinks he is, he could shut down the CIA and the Pentagon tomorrow. He could turn those both into landmarks. He could shut the whole thing down. It'd probably get him killed, but he could do it, you know.
I wonder what would happen if he just did that, if he was like, I'm shutting them down, we're going to build a new one. I wonder what, they would just get him out of office, right? I mean, there's no, like, the country would freak out. They'd be like, dude, you can't just shut down the FBI and the CIA. Like, what the fuck are we going to do? like, what, you're laying off all the cops? Like, what the fuck?
Here's what I think happened. There is a lot of evidence, and I have got 20 gigabytes of data from the internet. Most of it is lawsuits Trump has been involved in.
Yeah.
A lot of it is government documents. Does anybody realize that Trump has been under congressional investigation since 1997? They've been looking into his money laundering with the Russians for a long time. This is nothing new. And here's what I think is going on. And my cousin told me this. He says, and he's an FBI agent. He works out of the Washington, D.C. office. He says, if we don't want a suspect to know that we're after him for a crime, but he knows we're looking at him, we'll talk about something that has nothing to do with him. Well, if we're after him for money laundering, we'll say he's running hookers or something.
Yeah.
And then he'll say, oh, you're not going to find anything. You're wasting your time. And he says that will make the suspect relax because he'll think, oh, I'm not doing that. They'll find it out. I'm fine. And then he trips up, and they've got him on the real stuff. I think that's what they're doing to Trump. I think the election hacking is probably BS. I think they've been – the documents from the government clearly show they've been looking at him for money laundering with the Russians since 97. And I think they're trying to get him into a false state of relief so that when the time comes, they'll say, well, yeah, Russian hacking, yeah, we knew that was crap, but here's what we got you on.
Yeah, and they have like a huge money laundering case.
Yeah, and this, by the way, goes back to 911. this is how Trump and the Clintons and a lot of people are involved in 911. The Securities and Exchange Commission, most 911 researchers don't know this, were investigating money laundering by the U.S. government, the Israeli government, the Saudis, and a bunch of other entities both in America and abroad. The investigations were housed in both towers, and their communications equipment for the secret investigation were housed in the site of the Pentagon that was hit by the plane. That was a lawyer who showed me his credentials and showed me he was involved in that investigation for the SEC. Guess whose names came up in that?
Donald Trump somehow?
Donald Trump was one of them. But the Cheneys came up in that. The Clintons came up with that. The Bushes came up with that. There was a number of people, including people that currently just got busted, like old Paul Manafort, Carter Page. See, here's what they're doing. They've been laundering illegal proceeds for decades. Every researcher out there will tell you about money laundering and how billionaires and governments and intelligence agencies launder money.
Yeah, everybody does. I do not do it, though. I don't do it.
No, me either. I mean, they can launder my dollar
out of my pocket. Yeah, exactly.
If I wash
what I have in my wallet, that's about the extent of the money laundering I can do. Yeah, but no, that's like they always say. Yeah, all these factions, let's call them, they're mixed up in all that shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, here's where we get the deep state war. Everyone always says the war between the political left and the political right is fake. On the surface, the ideologies are fake, and they do a fake war. But behind the scenes, they are fighting, and the deep state is divided into those who simply want to do business as usual and those who want to expand. Now, I've noticed something, and this is something that started bothering me right after 911, and it finally culminated the other night in something that some researchers, I don't want to mention their names because they're already pissed at me on Facebook. But these researchers say, oh, the Russians are good guys, Putin's a good guy, and we go over there every year and do business meetings with them, and we do seminars and all that. And I'm like, and just what is Putin and Russian businessmen going to learn from a bunch of bankrupt American businessmen who live off their credit cards? Tell me that.
Yeah.
And what's happening is that the Russians, including Putin, and I know the Christian right will get mad because I demonize the two earthly messiahs that Christians worship, Trump and Putin. Okay. Unfortunately, I don't worship Putin, so yes, I do blaspheme both of them from time to time. And I tell people, I say, do you know who Putin used to be? He was KGB, okay? Nothing changed in Russia. Read The Perestroika Deception by Anatoly Golitsyn. Read that book. He's KGB. He'll tell you all, in his book, he tells you all about the lies of we're a new Russia, we're friends with the world, blah, blah, blah.
Right, right, yeah, it was a fake out. It was a fake out, yeah. I think everybody kind of realizes that now.
Yeah, people are still getting whacked in Russia.
Terrible place.
They just, right before Carter Page, who worked for Trump, defied about this Steele's dossier, they killed a Russian general who was the second in command of the Federal Security Bureau, which is the precursor, which took over for the KGB after the Cold War.
Right,
Much of the information found in the Steele dossier was found in the briefcase of this general. A briefcase that's very secure. Now, at first they said he was murdered, single gunshot wound to the head, sitting in the driver's seat of his car. Then the Russian media changed it after Putin got after him. They changed it, he had a heart attack and died.
It's an easy mistake to make, yeah.
Yeah, and so anyways, some of the stuff in his briefcase leaked because it was civilians who found him. The media showed up. They knew who he was, and they're like, ooh la la, this guy's a big shot. They started taking pictures of the stuff in his briefcase. This leaked to the Russian media, and then it leaked out on the Internet. Much of the stuff in that Steele dossier that alleges what Trump's involved in with the Russians was in that briefcase. So now people are saying, well, what about election hacking? I'm not sure that the Russians are that smart, first of all. And I don't think their hackers are that good. I mean, their hackers get caught every day. So I don't think they're that good. I think a Russian election hacking is a cover story for what the FBI and what the rest of them want. See, these guys are after the Russians because the Russians are inflating our money supply too high and jacking our real estate too high by infiltrating both the stock market, the bond market, and the real estate market.
Yeah.
Well, our people in our intelligence agencies, in Congress, they all have their money invested in the stock market. The problem is that what happens if the thing starts dropping, they're going to lose money. The Russians, however, are continuously laundering money through, and their money is, of course, backed by gold and silver. Ours is not. Ours is backed by nothing. The Russians are playing with our economy, and, of course, we're doing the same thing to them. So this is the deep state war. You have a deep state, part of the deep state, that is saying, you know what, we need to get out of this. This is a financial mess for us. Let's get out of this. And they're saying, you know what, let's you know, back away from this. Let's side with Trump. Let's, you know, try to make amends with Russia, try to get them to cool their heels so they don't crash our stock market. Then you have the other deep state that's saying, oh, screw you. We're going, you know, fast forward. We're going, you know, we're going after this guy. We're going after Russia.
Yeah.
Then you have those guys that are, they know both sides of the story. They know the Trump supporters. They know the Hillary deep state supporters. They're part of the deep state, but they're the guys that want to do their job because if they don't, they're afraid that they're going to go down. So they want to go after both sides in this because they see the disaster coming and they want to head it off at the pass.
Right. They're like the closest to the good guys you got. They're like the referee.
Yeah. So you have this war going on in this deep state, and you have those in the intelligence community who are smart enough to know that Trump is a loose cannon. And they're like, oh, my God. And my cousins talked to some of these guys, and they are literally, I mean, they just got migraine headaches 24 hours a day. They said every time Trump gets on Twitter, they're scared to death he's going to say something he should. You know, and they're worried about what he might say.
Now, do you think the PP tape is real? The P tape? You think the P tape is real? The P tape from the Steele dossier?
It's questionable at this point. There is so much disinformation being thrown around, and I think Steele himself got caught up in a disinformation campaign. I think he's got some legitimate stuff, but I think there's also some disinformation in there. So
the stuff about blackmailing Trump, you think is bullshit or no?
If it was real, I think the CIA would worship, because what Trump's involved in with the pedophiles, the CIA and the Israeli Mossad are involved in, and that'll take them all down. So I think they would have scrubbed that. I think Steele heard about it. I think it was a rumor. And he heard about it. Lots of people in Russia know, supposedly while he was over there, he was given hookers, golden showers and crap like that. And three ways and pulling trains and crap like that. I don't think there's anybody who was in the room when this was happening that's either alive or talking. I think it was just rumors. And I think Steele picked up on it and ran with it. And with this bona fide stuff he did have, he probably figured it had to be true. And with Trump's own admissions on the internet, you know, to CNN and other news agencies, and his big mouth, Steele just probably assumed it had to be true.
We don't know for sure. Well, if it ever leaks out on the internet, we'll find out. But even then, you don't know what to believe. So
yeah. But the thing with Trump, and this is where he is in trouble, but he could also bring the whole country down. They have had a wiretap on his Trump Towers for years, and they bugged everything. And this guy with his big mouth was having these Russian mobsters to Trump Towers. He moved the guys from Bayrock. Now, Bayrock has a lot of the same signatures that we saw with Bill Clinton and Whitewater. And, you know, the savings and loan down there that collapsed because of the drug running and the money laundering. We're seeing the exact same thing with Trump and money laundering and Bayrock. Bayrock is a company created by Tavi Hafiz. And he is both Saudi and Israeli. His mother was Israeli Jew, and his father was a Saudi. And he spent a lot of time in Russia after his mother got away from her abusive Saudi husband, went to Russia with him, as she had relatives and friends in Russia. They believed he was sheep-dipped by the Russian oligarchs because he's very good at hiding money. He's very good at avoiding the tax collectors. He came to the United States in 1987. He met up with Trump. He talked to Trump about opening businesses in Russia. Trump went to Russia. The deal fell through. The Russian oligarchs really didn't trust Trump. They thought he was a buffoon. They said, no, take this guy back to America. Things went from there, and Trump began surrounding himself with these Russian oligarchs. And one of them was a guy by the name of Felix Sater. Felix Sater was the chief of operations for Bayrock. Bayrock was under SEC and FBI investigation for years. They also had the CIA and Homeland Security looking at them. They were not only laundering money, they were moving a lot of Russian weapon systems around the world, selling Russian man pads to different countries. They had approached the CIA about helping the CIA, and the CIA initially told them to get lost. They had, said, well, we can help you with rebels and things like that. It does appear at one point that Felix Sater in 2006 did meet with the CIA, and it was after that that all of a sudden he gets moved to Trump Towers, right after that meeting with the CIA. Felix became like a marketing agent for Trump Enterprises, dealing with properties and such like. Felix Sater also has a very dirty background in that when he first came to the United States and he was trying to put things together and he was helping his buddies launder money and deal drugs and guns and all that, he got into a fight with a guy and put a wine glass stem through the guy's eye and killed him. Well, strangely enough, this guy didn't even do hardly any time at all, like 2 years, and all of a sudden the FBI has him out. Well, you know as well as I do, they turned him into an informant. So he ends up at Trump Towers. He's working with Trump. Trump is doing all these deals all over the world, and most of them are falling through. They're just falling through. And the Russians are not the type of people that if they give you money to build a hotel or whatever – and you screw up and lose all the money, they're not going to say, hey, it's all right, Yankee, don't worry about it. We'll take care of it next time. No, you lose their money, you lose a hand.
Yeah, you don't want to lose the money, except for the Russian mob, for sure. Yeah.
And it was becoming obvious because Trump had taken six bankruptcies, business bankruptcies, pretty much completely broke, no money, but he's still doing these deals. He's buying jets, he's buying cars. Got homes all over the world. He's living high. And people are like, how the hell is this guy doing this? The banks won't want any money. The banks in New York told him, get lost. You're not getting any more money from us.
Right.
Well, the FBI investigation and the wiretaps proved where his money was coming from. It was coming from the Russian mob.
I think they're going to shake all that out when this thing comes to a head. Now, somebody in the chat asked, it's good. So it's sort of like bring things back to a point on terra firma, in a sense. They want to know if people are – if this. We talked about these three groups, sort of the good, the bad, and the ugly. Is there somebody, like, above these people? Is there an overarching, like, Uber group that's even above that stuff? Or is it just, like – are we just in kind of, like, this state of, like, people fighting for control of the world, I guess?
Well, there is an overreaching group, and I mean, we know who they are. We've seen them written about in many books, the Rothschilds, Rockefellers. All of these people at these upper levels, these super rich families, they control all these people below them, the Russians, the Americans, the Chinese.
Yeah, so they don't care what happens, really, in a sense.
Yeah, they don't really care. The fighting doesn't mean anything to them because they get their cut. They get their money in the end. So they're the overreaching, overarching group, and they are what we would call, some researchers have called them the black nobility because they practice the black Catholic mass, which is like a satanic worship.
Yeah.
American researchers call them the New World Order, but it's all the same. It's always been the same, and nothing's changed. And these guys that Trump has surrounded himself with, what was one of the things that he said he would do? He was going to do all this stuff. He was going to normalize relations with Russia, and some of the other things he said he was going to do that only made a little bit of news coverage. He said that he was going to give back the Russians the property that had been seized in the U.S.
Right.
Under the Seth Magnitsky Act that Obama signed into law in 2011, for people that don't know about Seth Magnitsky, he was a Russian lawyer who was helping Americans funnel money into the U.S. from Russia. And basically, American businessmen and Russians within the Russian government were stealing the new ruble after the Russian Federation was created, laundering it out to American businessmen in the U.S. stock market. This is where we have a big problem. Some economists have actually picked up on this. If Congress determines that Trump is an idiot, they're not going to let Trump release all this property, but let's say Congress finalizes their investigation about the Russian money laundering and decide to seize not only the money in the U.S. that the Russians have invested here, but the real estate, there are two markets that will collapse immediately, the economic market and the real estate market, because the Russians are invested all over the United States in real estate. They're into everything, shopping malls, apartment complexes, you name it.
Really?
They're involved in the stock market. It's believed, though not proven yet, that they have an estimated $1 trillion in the stock market.
Jesus.
Clearly, if that's true, that's about 35% of the total value of the stock market.
Wow.
If Congress were to seize that real estate, our economy would be done tomorrow. And now you can see why people are worried about war with Russia, because Putin and his oligarch friends wouldn't stand for that for 2 minutes.
I don't know how this works, but wouldn't that help us if we just took like $1 trillion from Russia? I mean, I don't know how the money works in a sense. I mean, it's all sort of like dots on a computer, but couldn't we be like, hey, we just threw this into the debt, dude. We have $1 trillion, like, all of a sudden.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, it also has to do with investor confidence. If investors saw that the Russians had invested that much and the Congress is about ready to seize that money, investors would start pulling their money out. People that own real estate or people that were leasing commercial real estate suddenly found out some Russian mobster was their landlord, you know, instead of Trump or somebody, they might decide, we're getting out of this lease, we're getting out of here. Some of these leases are worth hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in lease payments. The scenarios here are so scary that the people who are actually looking at this are just petrified of what this means for our economy and our, you know, our image on the international stage.
Yeah, it's a scary state. So we talked about sort of the greater the bigger picture, but so what do you think, in your wisdom of the world, what do you think is going on? What do you think is going to happen with this Trump thing? You know, and what about North Korea? What do you think is going on with North Korea?
Well, I think North Korea is a distraction. Mm-hmm. What they want to do is they have to keep us away from looking at Syria. Syria is where the game is at. Forget North Korea. Armistice just after we left the Korean War. That's not even a contest. This isn't about Korea. It's about keeping the American public away from Syria and what's going on. First of all, we support these terrorists. We finance them. There's pictures of McCain with them in Syria, and there's pictures of McCain with them in Washington, D.C. when he brought these idiots to D.C. a couple of years ago. Clearly treason. These are hardcore, hardline Muslims who hate America. They hate Israel. They hate everyone. I mean, they'll work for the highest bidder. They don't care.
Yeah.
And we're funding these guys. They've got to keep us, the American public, away from that, because if the American public ever gets turned on to that and becomes public knowledge, then Putin can say, look what you're doing. Now, he already knows what we're doing. But because the American public doesn't know it, if he were to come out first and say, your government is funding terrorists, the American public, because we're so turned against Putin, say, oh, shut up, you old commie.
Yeah.
But if we screw up and it comes out first publicly, then Putin has the upper hand, and he could start annihilating U.S. forces in the Middle East and get away with it legally under international law.
Yes.
And right now, we are putting permanent bases in Syria in violation of U.S. and international law. We have not declared war against Bashar al-Assad, and we're in there trying to take him out. For people that have seen pictures of Damascus, believe me, if you don't think the Bible is real, remember the Bible says Damascus will become a ruinous heap. There's only like 20 square blocks left of Damascus.
Well, that raises a question. That's a dark question. That's a dark avenue to raise, though, William. Do you think we're do you think we're in the end times?
Oh, yeah. From a biblical perspective, I believe it. I know a lot of people get freaked out when I say that. And I'm like, but the Hindus, the Buddhists, they all have their own version of the end days. This is not just a Christian thing. You know, you can go to any country where there's Hindus and Buddhists, they'll tell you the same thing. Their religion talks about this, where that man will become so dark in his heart, you know, that this creator, and each religion has their own version of the creator, decides that's enough. You know, I've had enough of this. And so we have to, even if you don't believe in the Bible, even if you're an atheist, you've got to believe that we're in a lot of trouble. You know, you can't.
Yeah, you can't deny that. I think everybody listening, whether they like Donald Trump or dislike him, or wherever the hell they feel on the, or they're from a whole other country.
Yeah.
I think we can all fucking agree that things do not seem well.
No. And here's how I think it's going to work, and this is based off what my cousin told me, and lawyers and people in law enforcement. Look at what's going on with this investigation as an onion. Mueller is peeling away the layers of the onion. Trump is at the center of the onion. His family, his business associates, and people around him politically are all on the outer part of that onion. And Mueller is taking off the outer skin. And as you can see, if you've read any of the transcripts from the House Intelligence Committee hearings, you will see people like Paul Manafort, Carter Page, and the rest of these guys contradict themselves on a constant basis during the hearings.
Nice.
And Carter Page said the same thing that Trump said. I don't know anybody in Russia. I've never met with Russians. I just go over there and do economic seminars. I'm not personal friends. Then they said, oh, well, we've got this picture of you, and we've got this transcript where you were talking to this guy.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I talked to that Russian guy. Okay, well, we now know he came to the United States years ago, and he spent time at your home. He actually stayed in your home. If you don't know Russians and you're not personal friends with them, how come the director of Economic Ministry of Russia stayed at your house? I don't know him that well. This guy stepped over himself so many times and tripped over his own tongue, got indicted. Now, here's what I love about Trump supporters. Going back to Paul Manafort, he was indicted for being a foreign agent who was not registered in the U.S. And all the Trump supporters, who are about as brainwashed as the old Obama supporters were, they say, well, since Paul Manafort wasn't indicted for being involved in election hacking, he didn't try to buy the Russians, they didn't try to buy him, you can't indict him for anything. And I'm like, that doesn't make sense. Here's why. If the cops come to your house because they're being told you're serving alcohol to underage minors, and they come in the house, there's nobody underage, there's no alcohol, but they find a dead hooker in your bedroom, and you admit to them, well, yeah, I killed the hooker. She wanted too much money. Can they indict you? Yes, they can indict you, you moron.
Right.
They just have to go back and amend the warrant to put dead hooker on it, but they can still indict you. But Trump supporters say because Paul Manafort wasn't indicted for election meddling or hacking, he can't be indicted for being a foreign agent when he admitted he was not registered as a foreign agent.
Right.
It's just incredible how the stupidity factor here, and this is what's going to get us all killed, is people acting stupid long before the corrupt people will get us killed. The stupid people will.
Oh, man, you're preaching to the choir there. Now, just to be fair to Carter Page, which are words I never thought I would ever say, he has not been indicted for anything yet. But he's not been indicted at this time. So
okay. Well, they were talking like he had been indicted.
It seems like he probably will be, but yeah. in case he's listening.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't have enough to worry about. He may come after Banal of America and William Zabel, and we wouldn't want to tarnish our magic here.
Well, I would love to talk to some of these people personally and say, what in God's name are you doing in Russia? You know, say, oh, we're just teaching the Russians how to do business. I'm like, the Russians do business just fine. They don't need you idiot bankrupt Americans over there teaching them how to do anything. What I'd like to do is ask Carter Page, say, how much does the CIA pay you to go over there and get a suitcase of Russian rubles and bring them back to the U.S. and launder them? That's what I'd like to ask you.
So what do you think's going to happen to Donald Trump? You know, he's kind of a loose cannon, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's very scary, William, because I think that he's a little off the rocker, but at the same time, the people that support him, they think he's like the second coming of Christ or something. It's kind of scary.
Yeah.
And I know there were people like that with Obama. Don't get me wrong. There were plenty of people like that with Obama, but it's like, it's a creepy vehemence with Donald Trump. I find it's like a very, like a lust for authority that makes me creeped out. The lust for authority. People liked Obama because he was like a celebrity. You know,
yeah.
This is a whole different kind of cult of personality. This is like a fucking creepy cult of personality.
Yeah, this is like we got David Koresh as president or Jim Jones or something, you know. I'm just waiting for Trump to set up the card tables and start pouring out the Kool-Aid saying, come, my followers, come. You know.
Yeah.
But no, I think eventually what will happen is they'll get Trump on a 25th Amendment removal. There is a lot of evidence that he's got dementia. And if you've seen some of the news footage of him where he gets off Air Force One and starts walking down the tarmac and the Secret Service has to run after him. And,
right.
You know, and the limo was right there in front of him. They pulled the limo right up to the stairs and he just starts walking. And I'm thinking, yeah, he's showing a lot of dementia. There's things he can't remember he says, and then when he sees it, he goes, well, I don't remember saying that. And it's like, well, it's your Twitter account, you know. Just weird. You can just see it.
You've lost a step, that's for sure.
Yeah, I've watched my grandfather go through dementia. I've seen it before. The signs are very obvious. So I think if they remove him, they're going to do it in a way that doesn't upset Americans too much. They're going to say, hey, you know, this guy, he's got dementia. He's a danger to himself and to the country. He doesn't know what he's doing. You know, we've got to get him out. And I think the Republicans are starting to swing around to that. Some of them, at least.
Just offer, like, be like, hey, dude, you got to resign or else we're going to take you out with the 25th Amendment kind of thing. I feel like if they gave him the option, he would be like, all right, well, I'd rather, you know, resign than be forced out because I'm crazy.
I think they'll give him that because for one thing, his lawyer has told him to shut up multiple times and stay off Twitter, and he won't do it. And every time he gets on Twitter, it gets worse. And I think he's going to say something really stupid. And it's going to be so damaging, they're not going to have a choice but to remove him. I'm waiting for him to just come right out and say it, that, you know, we're supporting the rebels. We know that they're bad. You know, we know they're terrorists, but, you know, we've got to use these people, which is not something a president should say. But I've got a feeling that in some ways, even with dementia, he still has some faculty there. And I still think he's such an arrogant old cuss. He thinks he can do anything and get away with it.
Right.
And I think that coupled with dementia makes him far more dangerous than Obama ever was.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus. That goes without saying. Obama was like, he was a puppet.
Yeah.
Trump doesn't seem like a puppet. He seems like a puppet that's come to life. He's like Chucky.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
he's
the guy that the mafia don tells him to go out and do a hit, and he does a hit, and then he goes to the Italian restaurant and starts bragging, yeah, we hit old Uncle So-and-so, yeah, we busted his kneecaps. You know, and the mafia don, you know, saying, you're not supposed to talk about this. What are you doing? You know,
yeah.
I think that Trump's that kind of person, you know.
Right.
And
right.
I think I think it's that celebrity ego that he has. He just can't help himself.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm Trump. I'm the man. You know, who's going to do anything to me, you know?
That summed it up better than anything I've heard in a long time. Yeah, that's pretty much his attitude. I'm Trump.
Yeah.
I'm the man. Yeah. Believe me, I'm no fan. I'm not a fan at all of Trump, so.
Yeah. Well, anyways, if we can kind of add on to what Trump is doing a little bit here.
Yeah.
This kind of nails a couple more groups in America, which conservatives will start crying if they're listening to your radio show. And I'm sorry,
I don't think I have many conservative listeners anymore.
Okay. Oh, I chased them all away? Or?
No. Well, I've chased them all away, but who knows about.
Anyways, the NRA is involved in this mess. The NRA went to Russia, and they were trying to talk about, you know, gun rights and all that, which, well, talking about gun rights in Russia is like going into a whorehouse and talking about virginity. It just doesn't fit, you know. And the NRA, these guys, I've emailed them a couple of times about their involvement with a guy named Alexander Torshin. Alexander Torshin is the godfather of the Moscow-based Tanaskia crime syndicate, which is part of it's an arm of the Russian mafia, and he paid for the high-ups in the NRA to go to Moscow to talk about civil rights and the rights of individuals to defend themselves and all that kind of stuff. This guy has been indicted in Spain. He was thrown out of the Duma. He was thrown out of the upper house of parliament in Russia. And this was just about a year ago. The thing about the NRA is that even though they know that he is involved in the Russian mob, they didn't seem to have a problem with that. And unfortunately, on the Christian right, we see this attitude where, oh, okay, so he might be involved with the mob, but at least he's not involved with the Democrats and Hillary. You know, this really stupid mentality where...
Right. Yeah. I've heard that where it's like, hey, man, it's okay if he worked with the Russians because fuck Hillary. It's like, what?
Yeah.
I don't remember, you know.
Hillary worked with the Russians, too.
Absolutely. Well, look, I said it on the show before. It's like, they're both evil people, but they've been trying to catch Hillary for like 20-something years, and they haven't. And this fucking guy can't step out in front of himself. You know, he's all left feet.
Yeah.
You know, he's an idiot. It's like, I'd rather have the fucking supervillain run the country than the fucking dope.
Yeah. At least everything would be efficient. I mean, there's nothing efficient under this guy.
Yeah, anyone who's like, oh, we choose the lesser of two evils, it's like, well, no, choose the greater of fucking two evils because they're both idiots. Then fucking pick the better villain, man.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand what people were thinking there.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, you have American organizations who are going to Russia. They know these people are bad that they're meeting with. They know these people are bad that are paying their way over there, but they're doing it anyways. The American Conservative Union, they went to Russia. They met with all of these people who are on this Seth Magnitsky Act, which are people that Congress made the law, Obama signed it, and said these guys are Russian mobsters. They're involved in human rights abuses in Russia. They're running child pornography rings. They're laundering money. No American can do business with these people or have any contact with them. And here's all the people around Trump having contact with those people, even though they know they're not supposed to. So they're violating U.S. law. They're violating international law because the Seth Magnitsky Act became an international law, too. The UN and The Hague both recognized that and have put sanctions on Russia, wanting Putin to clean these oligarchs up, or they're not going to take sanctions off Russia. So they're violating international law. They're violating U.S. law. And the only question I have is, why would so-called good Bible-thumping Christians like the NRA and the American Conservative Union and a bunch of these other people, why would you go to Russia? Well, first of all, there's no such thing as a good American conservative. Most American Christian conservatives have got some kind of dirt. And a lot of these American conservatives – they're they're laundering money. They're doing the same thing they accused the government and the left wing of doing. Look at all the militia groups. Look what they were doing. Oh, the New World Order's going to come get us, so we're going to go rob a bank and get the money to buy guns to go fight the government. So how are you better than the government? You know, if you're going to go rob a bank.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to go rob a bank to get the money to buy guns to go fight the so-called UN troops, you know, hiding in the parks, the national parks, you know. And so the people, and these people are being drawn in by the globalists on the right, the Christian right, and they get so into this whole patriotism and all that. And, of course, Edmund Burke spoke about that. Edmund Burke said patriotism is the virtue of the vicious, and he kind of had a good reason to say that. So these Russian oligarchs are laundering money through Trump's properties. Trump has 450 limited liability companies registered in Delaware and New York and New Jersey. Who the hell needs that many little limited liability companies? I already had a friend go to all these addresses, and it's an empty office with a desk and a phone. That's all it is. They're shell companies. That's all they are.
No.
And if you look at his companies, like his main ones that are part of the congressional investigation, 40 Wall Street Limited and 44 Wall Street Limited, these two buildings, they're right across the street from each other, you will find that they're owned by another limited liability company. And that company is owned by another limited liability company, which is in turn owned by a limited liability company out of Delaware, who is in turn owned by an offshore entity in the Bahamas. That is called structuring. People go to jail for that in America. But
yeah.
Trump hasn't. Why? Because I think they went to Trump during this wiretap investigation when Felix Sater worked for him. And I think they put Felix Sater in there. They turned Felix and said, we want Trump. Not necessarily because the FBI is all a bunch of good people and they want to take down criminals. I think they want to know where all that money is so they can get access to it. I think they want the money. I think they want to know where the Russians are hiding stuff in America besides real estate and the stock market. Because this government is hemorrhaging in debt right now. They're in bad trouble at all levels of government. And I think the CIA, the FBI, Congress, all of them, they want that money. I mean, look at asset forfeiture. They take your stuff because they found you with, you know, a joint in your car. So they arrest your car and let you go. Why? Because that's how cities fund their operations, is through asset forfeiture. And I think that's what they're doing here. They don't care about Russian money laundering. They just want the money. They want to get their hands, the American government wants to get their hands on that money. And that's what this is about. And I think they sent Felix Sater in there as an informant. He got the goods on Trump, and they went to Trump and they said, here's the wiretaps. We've got you. Now you work for us and the Russians. You're going to tell us where the money's at. You're going to tell us what's going on here. And I think the globalists put him in the White House so that he can turn the tables on the Russians and to draw everyone into a conflict that will eliminate a lot of people who know too much on both sides of the ocean. And I think that their intent is eventually a world war, the globalists. I think they want to get rid of a lot of people. And I think that they've got Trump in there as their card. I don't think he's necessarily an enemy of the deep state. I think he hates them to a certain degree, but it's like the same way a hooker hates her pimp. You know, she's got to make a living, but she doesn't like giving her cut to her pimp. Well, Trump is the hooker, and the deep state is the pimp. And they're telling him, get out there and shake your moneymaker. We want money. And he's like, oh, geez, I got to go do this again. Can I just keep my money? You know. Now, I think that's what's happening here. And this has got everyone within this deep state divided. Because, like I said, you got the hardliners that want war with Russia. You got those that want business as usual. Now, let's just get along with Trump. Let's just keep letting everybody launder their money. Then you got those who are right underneath the big shots who maybe they're opportunists. They want to make a name for themselves as a law enforcement agent. So they're like, hey, if I can take down the Russians and Trump and all of it all together, boy, you know, I might be a presidential candidate. I mean, you've got those types in there, too, involved in all this.
Well, what about China? What do you think? How do they fit into all this?
Oh, you broke up there. What?
Oh, sorry. What do you how does China fit into all this? You said not to worry about North Korea, but what about China? They can't be too happy about Russia and America sort of having this cold financial war.
Yeah, well, the Chinese are worried because, you know, their economy is cooling, and they own $1.2 trillion in treasury bills. They don't like what's going on. They don't like this mess at all because, hey, they might be Chi-Coms, but they're still businessmen. And, you know, they just assassinated one of their billionaires who is screwing with their economy.
Yeah, they seem like they're going to just wait and pick up the pieces when it's all said
and
done. They're
trying. Yeah, they're very patient compared to Russians and Americans. They're very patient. They want to stay as neutral as they can. They're playing both sides of the line with North Korea. They support North Korea, but they support our sanctions. Their government is telling Kim Un, you know, hey, cool your heels, stop shooting off missiles. Then they're telling the Americans, please back off, no more sanctions, we've got this, blah, blah, blah. So they're trying to appease both sides of the fence. And in the end, I don't think they need to, because I think the real target is Syria. And I think they desperately want to take out Bashar al-Assad. And all of this goes back to 9-1-1, because it's all about getting that oil line from Afghanistan down through Iran, across Iraq, into Syria, out to the ports, so they can offload the oil to both Israel and the U.S. and Western Europe. The reason why is because Russia is making inroads into Western Europe. They're already selling the Western Europeans natural gas. Now they want to sell them oil, and the American oil people are like, oh, no, 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 we don't want that. We want to control the oil in Western Europe. And the problem is the insurgents, who are just normal Iraqi citizens tired of U.S. presence in their country, are blowing up the oil line. Well, they got the one in Afghanistan done to the border of Iran, but the Iranians are saying, you want to do what? No, you're not going to put an oil pipeline through our country. So now we're trying to destabilize Iran so that we can take them over, complete the pipeline through there. And that's why Trump wants to go back into Iraq, by the way. He wants a recommitment to Iraq because they want to finish the pipeline, take out Bashar al-Assad. And there's plenty of news articles for people that can read both Farsi and Arabic, where Bashar al-Assad is saying the Americans will not put an oil pipeline through my country. It's not going to happen. He said that in 2009. So that tells you what they were doing there. There are maps of this pipeline online. You can find them at a lot of websites, including even conservative political think tanks in Washington, D.C. There's the Rutherford Institute. There's a couple of others. And just type in Afghan-Syria transnational pipeline, and it will come up and it will show you. And some 911 researchers picked up on this, and they, you know, they figured out pretty quickly, you know, what 911 was really about. Well, it was a multi-pronged attack. One was to stop the investigation into money laundering and everything else that America and Israel and Saudi Arabia were doing, but they also needed that pipeline. They want to control the oil flow in the world. They do not want Russia getting a foothold in Western Europe. The problem is Russia can offer Western Europe a better deal than America will.
Yeah.
The limits of debate in this country are established before the debate even begins, and everyone else is marginalized. They're made to seem either to be communists or some sort of disloyal person. A kook, there's a word.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
And now it's conspiracy. See, they've made that something that should not be even entertained for a minute, that powerful people might get together and have a plan. Doesn't happen. You're a kook. You're a conspiracy buff.